Hello, people, and welcome back to the Outer Bound podcast. We are back again as another week with the people. I was about to say gang, but then that is stereotyping.
Yeah, you don't want to stereotype us.
Yeah. I'm back with the law abiding citizens. We've got Sam, Kojo, and the Bass. How are you doing?
I'm great. Bro,
you said I'm a law-abiding citizen. I just had to pay a fine to drive in a bus lane. So yeah, but let's go with that.
Abbas, why are you always paying fines for?
Do you know what? Sometimes I look at convenience versus having to think. It's just convenient at that time to drive in the bus lane and then make my turn and then pay the fines later.
£65. You're talking about convenience.
35 if you pay within 14 days. So that's what I do.
Bernie's
got nice parking.
In this London, they charge you £130 and it's £65 if you pay a
house. That's why when I come to London, I make sure I stick by the rules. But anywhere else, I'm good.
Oh, that's crazy. Well, London, please take notes. Is it Rishi Sunak or whatever he calls himself? Go and take notes from them. But as we're not here to talk about PCNs, even though I can go all day about them. So, obviously, we had Premier League football in yesterday, and I can't lie, before yesterday happened, I think everybody was talking about how rubbish the schedule was because we had Arsenal, Chelsea and Liverpool all playing at the same time. But after yesterday, thank God for the scheduling, because while the North London derby was going on, Chelsea were embarrassing themselves and nobody was focusing, so I just thank God for that. But where did Sam go? Anyways, but as I said, the North London derby happened yesterday. 2-2, entertaining game at the Emirates. Just before we dissect the game a bit, I'm just going to ask you guys what you guys think of the game overall.
I thought it was a thrilling game, man. I think it lived up to the hype. I felt like Tottenham definitely surprised my overall expectation of them heading into this game. I thought Tottenham were probably going to get outplayed and probably lose this one, but credit to them. They stepped up to the plate, they played some good football in moments. I think they definitely showed their progression under Ange Postecoglou. And overall, I think it was a fair result. I think 2-2 was a fair result on you know from what we saw on the balance of play. You could say Tottenham a bit unlucky not to get the win. But overall, I think they can be very proud of the performance. I feel like to kind of go to the Emirates and play with dignity and make it a game, even though Arsenal were missing a few of their key players, there was a lot of absentees of, you know, Marleny, Trossard, Partey, and whatnot. But credit to Tottenham, I think they showed great heart. They played some good football. Scored two goals, which were genuine goals, in compared to Arsenal, where it took a wicked deflection from Mero, from Saka's shot. And obviously the penalty, which was kind of controversial, was a bit of a debatable penalty. But I think overall it was a good game. I think it lived to the hype. And I think probably you would say it's probably the best game of the weekend by a good mile.
Do you know what? I'm kind of a bit cordial. I'll say this. You know, like when it comes to derbies, like this is probably the only derby in England right now that lives up to the hype. City United, it is what it is. We expect City to go out there, put on a masterclass. Chelsea, we're just stuck in London. We have a derby, but we don't have a derby. We don't really care about it. It's just another game that we're going to lose. And then when you really look at it, like I know Arsenal and Spurs fans kind of like circled this game in the calendar and stuff, but I think a lot of just neutral fans circle it because it's one of them games that does tend to live up. Either one team will beat the other team badly and be like, we'll have a talking point. We'll have what we had yesterday where there were like goals and they were splitting each way, or someone will just start fighting with each other. Romero will probably do that if to kickstart it up. But I think like when you look at derbies in general, this is probably the one when you circle it and be like, yeah, that's the one you kind of want to watch. Even Man United, Liverpool kind of has lost it because recently Liverpool seemed to be that team that just blows them away, whether it's home or away type of thing. So this is kind of that derby that you're like, yeah, I want to watch type of thing. And it delivered yesterday, I think. Obviously, we'll go in a bit more detail, but just to give to you, I think Spurs really were the better team. I think Arsenal got, I'm not going to say lucky, or I'm not going to say they survived, but I think they got the grain of the luck type of against them. But because I think Spurs probably dominated in more passages of plays in that game.
It's kind of funny because obviously end of 2-2, but you can see the construct from different sides. Whereas in Tottenham, definitely seem the happier of the side coming away, and they should be because coming into the game, a lot of people are saying this is a game that Arsenal should win, even though they're the same amount of points that Arsenal are level ahead and Arsenal were the title challengers last season. The question I want to ask about Tottenham, because it looks like they seem to be getting a lot of praise, and I want to ask you, do you feel like this is a situation that is similar to what happened with... Remember when Mourinho and Conte, they first came in, they were having great starts to the season and all those kind of things. And then it was either towards the end of the season, middle of the season, maybe the next season, they started tailing off and they started performing poorly. Do you feel with like Ange is a thing, whereas in that this is just a purple patch, or do you feel like Tottenham are probably the real deal going forward to, and they're going to start building on from here?
I wouldn't say they're the real deal, but I think this is probably going to continue, because I think with Ange, he's got a philosophy and an ethos of how he wants to play. And it's crazy because we've said this on numerous occasions on different pods as well, where you see United fans talk about Ten Hag and saying he needs time, he doesn't have his own players to build his own philosophy, etc. But we've seen two managers that have gone into new jobs and been able to implement their tactical ethos, their style of play straight away out the gate, which is De Zerbi and Ange. And I just think that because he's got a style of play, everyone knows what their roles are in the team. And like you could see, like Basuma's been there for a couple of years, and we're seeing Basuma of the past when he was at Brighton. Do you know what I mean? He's balling, he's doing his thing. So I think they're still going to continue, and people are going to be surprised. And they're lucky because they're not playing no Europe. They're not in any cups until January, until the FA Cup. So essentially, they're going to be playing one game a week. And that's going to enable them to have a fit squad. So I do see them challenging to probably make the top four based on that. And I guess what the next step is if Daniel Levy backs Ange to spend either in January or moving forward and allows him to build, you know, the team that he wants. But I think they're going to continue doing what they're doing. Like the players have bought into whatever Ange is doing. And we can see just by how they're playing. And Maddison at Leicester, you could kind of see that he needed a refresh and maybe down tools. But now he's at Tottenham, he's looking at the Madison of old.
This is what I'll say about Ange compared to Conte and Mourinho. You like, sometimes we talk about players being bigger than the club. No player is bigger than the club, probably outside of Messi for Barcelona or whatever. Mourinho and Conte were bigger than Tottenham. Mourinho came from managing Inter Milan, Real Madrid, Chelsea. He had heritage, as he used to like joke about. Man United won league titles. Conte coming off winning league titles at Chelsea, Juventus. I don't think he had gone Inter before then. So had he gone Inter before? Whatever.
He was Inter before.
Yeah. So he had done that where he had no disrespect to Ange, but managing in Australia and then Celtic, coming to Tottenham, similar to when Pochettino came in, like you're not bigger than the club. So you can fit in, slide in, do your thing, and you won't be as probably outspoken as the guys that came in beforehand, and that kind of fits. Because if you look at Daniel Levy, for example, the second you kind of fall out of line, he kind of pulls the plug on you type of thing. I know with Conte, he didn't pull the plug, but it was inevitable that he was going to leave. With Mourinho, he did that just before Cup Final. And I don't think Ange will be that type of manager at the moment in time anyway, where his reputation is probably bigger than the club. Whereas Mourinho and Conte came in where their reps were bigger than Tottenham Hotspur in general.
I mean, I get where you're coming from. It's just a thing where it's...
And just quickly, one thing to just...
Oh, yeah. No, what I was just going to say is that for me, I understand what you're saying, and you do make a good point, whereas in is a bit different with Ange coming in because it's not bigger than the club and stuff, but I don't know, I just feel like I've seen it too many times, especially with Tottenham, that a manager comes in and they do really well in the first season, they get them back in the Champions League, and then they fall off the next season or tail off towards the end of the next. I still need to see more to be convinced.
But basically, if you see Tottenham's ceiling, just quickly, Tottenham's ceiling, what really is it?
That's what I say, the expectations are different.
League and top. Yeah, like yeah, this ceiling...
Really, I get what you mean. I was going to come to the next question. So I'm just going to ask. In that case, with Ange, if you're a betting person, man, which I'm sure some people here are and some people here aren't, I won't name names. But if you were a betting man, by the end of the next season, would you bet on Tottenham to at least win a trophy?
Probably not. I don't know. Look, history. You wouldn't want to bet on Tottenham, innit? You wouldn't want to bet.
Nah.
On them. But at the same time, I don't think you can say that it's 100% like. done that Tottenham can't win any trophy on the end, isn't it? But at the same time, I do agree with you. I think it's a bit too early to say whether Tottenham are the real deal or not, because look, it's only six games. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, if this is like 20 games in and Tottenham were fifth in the Premier League and were, let's say, a few points behind, you know, top four, then you can make a case, you know what, yeah, you know what, Tottenham are making great strides, they're playing good football. You know what, maybe next season is where they seem they can kick on and actually show everyone that they actually are much better side than that. We should take notice of that. Do you know what I'm saying? But because it's only six games in, I don't think it's we're at the stage where we can build like proper concrete opinions on Tottenham, whether they're going to do well or whether Andrew's going to be a bust for them. Like, I think it's a bit too early. I think we've got to wait and see. What we can do right now is say, yeah, right now they're playing well, they're doing well. I think they're definitely surpass expectations, but it's a bit too early to build concrete opinions on Tottenham and Andrew at this current moment. So I think
what I'd say is with the trophy question that you asked, the reason I think they can't win a trophy isn't because they're not capable of doing it. It's because if you look at the way football is for the early rounds of a tournament, you normally throw in your B team because you tend to be trying to save your guys for the league and stuff.
It depends what tournament though.
Let's just say League Cup and FA Cup, even then your third rounds, whatever, you're going to throw in like B-plus players or B-team players. When it comes to Tottenham, their B-team is so significantly bad or hasn't played any minutes or just such ring rust compared to the A-team that it will end up springing up results that you probably won't expect. For example, if they drew, let's say, Sheffield United in the third round of the FA Cup, Sheffield are going to go all out there to try to do their best. Tottenham will be a bit lackadaisical, put in a secondary team. That team's hardly had any minutes. They'll fall short, which is what they exactly did in the League Cup. And I think if you look at the quality of depth, it's not there for trophy runs, but it's there to be able to do well in the league or get the Champions League spots, because their first 11 or first 13, 14 players are good enough, because the quality right now in the league is so inconsistent that allows them. But when it comes to the Cup, when they switch over to put like basically 9 out of 11 players haven't played in the first team, the quality in depth, the fall off is too much for them to actually be able to compete.
Yeah, it's kind of like echo what Abbas said, and to kind of come back to kind of answer your question, Rich. Again, we need to see what Tottenham do in the summer transfer window, and most importantly, come up in the January transfer window to really kind of get an idea of what this team can actually do going forward. I don't think for me, Andrew's completely got his squad this season. Obviously, I feel like Daniel Levy's probably going to back Ange throughout, you know, the years he's at Tottenham. So let's say if he does get his players, it could be a different Tottenham team. So maybe they could have a team which is more complete, has more depth, and they can maybe challenge in the cut run. You do got to remember that a couple of seasons ago, I think maybe 4 seasons ago or whatnot, three seasons ago, when Tottenham got to the Carabao Cup final against City, and even 5 seasons ago, they got to, no, I think it was 6 seasons ago, they got to the FA Cup semi-final against Chelsea. So they've been in positions where they've gotten deep into cup tournaments, and they've gotten close. And even 4 seasons ago, they got to a Champions League final. So I don't think it's completely out of the imagination that Tottenham can't get to a cup final, because, you know, do they have money? It depends if Daniel Levy is going to back Ange Postecoglou. If they have a very good season, I think Daniel Levy will feel more confident that actually I'm going to give him the money to build a team where it can actually progress, not on the league level, but also on the cup level as well.
Now, I do 100% agree with you on that point. I said it would just be interesting to see if, because at the end of the day, as much as Tottenham they do need to win a trophy at some point, and I feel like a trophy is what will then help them get to the next level. Just speaking on the other team, Arsenal, because as much as Tottenham fans seem to be celebrating, which is understandable because they're small, Arsenal, they seem depressed. It's like they feel like the league title have just ended just there and then. And as Abbas said, they weren't really that impressive. And I'm really going to go, because I remember I said at the beginning of the season, even though they've won a bunch of games this season, I felt like this season they were not going to get any better. I felt like with the signings that they made, and last season was a big missed opportunity for them. Obviously, Declan Rice goes down, Jorginho comes in, who's an experienced player, he makes the mistake. But even that aside, I didn't even think, even when Jorginho was on, even when Declan Rice was on the pitch, it wasn't like Saka was outstanding. It wasn't like Jesus was outstanding. It wasn't like, Nketiah was shit. He was shit. Odegaard signs a new contract, and his first game, he's taking the Aubameyang greet when Aubameyang sent out 300k and he started putting in stinkers. So it just makes you feel, what do you think of the way Arsenal have gone about this? Wait, this season.
I'm going to keep this quick because I know Sam's got to say in this. Look, Arsenal are still a good team. I still think they're going to get top four. But I do agree with you. I don't think they're going to make much improvement from what they did last season. And I said this to myself and to a couple of my brethren, that I don't think Arsenal are going to be any better. And this is the problem for Arsenal. Look, winning the league is a bit out of a question for them when you're against Man City, which are a top team, you know, with so much resources, with Pep Guardiola. But I think for Arsenal, what they should be focusing on is trying to win a trophy, which they're still in the marks of doing that. You know, they've got FA Cup, Carabao Cup, Champions League, you can have a little cap of that. But the main thing for Arsenal is trying to be better as a team. Like, maybe this season, try to get 90 points, maybe lose less games, concede less goals. Right now, they've conceded 5 goals in the first 3, maybe 4 home games this season, which is a bit worrying. Because Arsenal defensively last season at home were very, very good. They were an impeccable team. And I feel like, for me, they haven't really been as sharp in the first half. It usually seems like they kind of click into the gear later on. And yesterday, they didn't really click into the second gear or third gear at all. And I feel like, for me, now that Champions League football is going to take a toll on their players and they pick up injuries. You know, it's just been announced that Declan Rice has got a back injury. We don't know how long he's going to be out for. You know, Martinelli's kind of injury prone as well. You know, Partey's out as well. Timber suffered ACL. He could be out for the majority of the season, if not all of the season. So, for me, there's a bit of worry to Arsenal. They haven't really started the season as sharp as, you know, you expect them to. They're still winning games, which is good for them. I thought their best game to the performance this season was the game against PSV. They were outstanding, played really good football there. But they're not really playing the sharp, dazzling football as they did in the Premier League like they did last season. And I feel like with the injuries now, especially now having Champions League football, it's going to mount extra pressure on them. And I don't know if they can be able to kind of make an improvement, letting them even catch Man City so far within 6 games.
You know, it's crazy. I'm just trying to let you go, Sam. Remember the when we did the Premier League review or preview of the season, we were talking about if Jesus can outscore one of Jota, Nunes or Diaz. And it was a crazy question to ask. And on commentary yesterday, they were saying that the missing piece for Arsenal is now the striker. And I remember when Jesus signed for Arsenal, and everyone was talking about how they've got this Bola, Jogo Benito and all that kind of stuff. And I said that there's a reason that Jesus only scored 8 goals the previous season for Man City, where 4 of them came in 1 game, which means he only scored in like 4 games that season. And I was trying to say, he's not that guy, pal. He is not that guy. And now it looks like Fabrizio's reported today that they're going in to look for Ivan Toney, like they want to get a new striker after they just got rid of Balogun, who a lot of people say is better than Nketiah. So it's crazy how whenever they try and fix one problem, another problem just arises, or they never seem to get to fix the problem to the point where it can be sustained for years. But I'll let you go, Sam, on your take with Arsenal.
Yeah, to be honest, my take's going to be very short. Kind of echoing what Kojo said. In terms of Arsenal this season, they haven't started in the swashbuckling style they started last season. And you can see it's where Arteta's trying to make a lot of changes. And sometimes I think he overthinks what he's trying to do. It's like he's trying to be Pep too much. And it all started where you had Kai Havertz in, you bought him, you're trying to figure out how to implement him into the team, and it quite hasn't worked. And as much as a lot of Arsenal fans were getting that Xhaka and stuff like that, his position in that team was very unique in terms of how he played. He would normally drop back into left-back position to allow Zinchenko to get forward or cover. Whereas when you're playing Vieira and Kai Havertz, they don't necessarily do that. And to say they started off well, they have. But if you go based on last season, they've actually dropped four points. But in a sense of last season, when they played Fulham, they beat Fulham at home. And then last season, when they played Tottenham, they beat Tottenham at home. But these 2 games now have drawn. In terms of that, they're in a negative point in terms of points-wise. And you can see just how City are playing. At the moment, yes, we haven't played any big teams, but right about now, we seem like a well-oiled machine. We've got a few injuries, but we've got players that we can kind of plug and play. And we're used to playing on a Saturday, Wednesday. And I think Abbas was saying this, and Kojo as well, is how are they going to deal with the Champions League and the Premier League and having to deal with injuries and having a team to kind of plug and play different players in? And it's all good having a team of 11 and subs, but do you actually trust your subs? Whereas City, we've got 11 and subs, and Pep doesn't mind saying, okay, cool, Doku, you start, or Grealish, you start, or Nunes, you start, or Foden, you start, or Bernardo Silva. So this is where we're going to see Arteta's man management and see how he can kind of instill and make these players feel like they're part of the team and bring them in if he has to bring them in, i.e. Reece Nelson, Fabio Vieira, whoever, Tomiyasu. Obviously, I think he's suspended or injured, whatever situation. But in terms of making those relevant changes, how does he deal with that on a week-in, week-out basis? But long story short, I don't think Arsenal are at the same level they were last season.
Do you know what it is? For Arsenal to be at the same level as they were last year is kind of impossible to do because of how high they were. Like, at the end of the day, the only team that was better than Arsenal last year was Manchester City. So, in itself, like, you take Man City, you win the league. And and they were on top of the league for whatever percentage of the league it was a significantly high amount. So, for them first to do that is going to be impossible. Second, they are getting results. The third thing is, it's expectation for me. When you look at last year when they did what they did, the expectation was a lot more minimal on them. It was, okay, you guys, bottle top four, can you get back into it? And they did.
Yeah.
If you look at another team, I'll say it again, Liverpool under the radar, but Liverpool are finishing second in the Premier League. They are sneaky good for what they're able to do. And this is the first time under the Jurgen Klopp era where there's hardly any expectation for them to do good. They probably got this, like, okay, get into the top four Champions League expectation, but there's not much more than that because everyone's looking at them to say, okay, whatever the core players are every year are continuing to get old, can they produce? They're buying players to rejig that entire midfield type of thing. So they basically are sneaky good and they're going to be what Arsenal were last year in my eyes. But for Arsenal, like you guys have said, they've got the results. Like my club can't even get the results. But yeah, they'll never hit them levels as they did last year because it's just hard to replicate that. But again, it's just one of them things where sometimes you play fresh managers. Ange is a fresh manager, so Arteta has to adapt to him. Whereas Ange probably doesn't have to adapt as much because, again, the pressure side of things falls onto Arteta and he's going to get that for the majority of this season now. They'll be, except for Manchester City, okay, you're going against Manchester United. Can you beat them? Yeah, you did. But can you be convincing as you're playing Liverpool? This is the first time Arsenal were probably going to a Liverpool game where it's like Arsenal are the favourites. You should beat them at the Emirates type of thing. Spurs, obviously, they'll do that anyway. Chelsea, they beat us quite badly. But again, there'll be them games now where the people are looking at them to be like, you guys have to be favourites and go ahead, put a performance in. Outside of Man City, like I said, the expectation has risen on Arsenal and to live up to that is quite difficult.
I think the interesting thing that you did say, I do agree with, is obviously, as you mentioned, Liverpool, because I saw some Arsenal fans try to optimistic saying they're only 1 point off worse than they were last season. But the difference is now it's not just Man City that is ahead of them. Liverpool now seems ahead of them. Brighton seems to be cooking. And Tottenham are still in and around there. That's going to be challenging for Tottenham. So we'll see. Obviously, just still keeping on football because obviously, Jude Bellingham has gone through a journey, scored all these bunch of goals. But then I feel like yesterday was the Madrid derby, which happened quite late. So I feel like it was one of the few times that people actually focused on La Liga. And he seemed to put in a bit of a stinker. And it, not even just he put in a stinker, he seemed to be quite poor in the Champions League early on in the week as well. But then obviously, he got the goal. And you know what they say, like, a goal can change your life type of thing. But it's just one of those things that a lot of people have been saying he's been signing of the summer and all those kind of talk. And I just want to see what your guys' take is on that. I'll start with Kojo.
First of all, I think Jude Bellingham has done a great job since he's been at Real Madrid. I think what he's been able to do, take on the pressure of kind of playing a role which is not his usual role. Because Jude Bellingham really is a box-to-box and he kind of playing like a sort of like a second striker in a way. And you know, he's been contributing to the goals and he's got, I think, these two assists in the games that he's been playing in. Obviously, they had the best games yesterday, but you can say Madrid weren't at it at all. They were very disappointing as a collective. The performance of Wednesday against Union Berlin, again, they were very disappointing for practically the whole game, really. So I wouldn't really say, like, Bellingham, and he got the winner, was at the right place, right time, and got the goal in the 93rd minute. But for me, Real Madrid, I would say Bellingham is a candidate for signing the summer just for what he's done and the impact he's made. Probably not the signing the summer, in my opinion. But I think the whole situation with Bellingham right now is that he's playing in a role which is a bit too demanding for him. You know, he's a box-to-box. and he's been kind of forced a bit more forward, where that's not really his game. And the reason why he's been forced more forward is that Real Madrid obviously have injury problems with, you know, Vinicius, Rodrigo's quite inconsistent at times. And most importantly, they don't have a number nine, which is really consistent and, you know, is a real scorer. Like, you know, you can rely on him to get the goals. And he had that over a decade with Cristiano Ronaldo, even attacking players such as Bale, and obviously Benzema, who's left for Saudi Arabia now. And getting Hossley, you know, obviously in as a number nine, which is kind of depleted their attacking, play and just how, you know, potent they are going forward. It's kind of forced Bellingham to kind of exert a lot of energy in the role that he's not really comfortable at, you know, because at Dortmund, he wasn't really scoring many goals. Yeah, he got a few goals here and there, and he scored bangers, and we know he can score great goals, but it wasn't as consistent as it right now. Like, right now, I wouldn't be surprised if Jude Bellingham finishes 12 goals in the league, or maybe what, maybe 18 to 20 goals in all comps, because you've got the Copa del Rey as well, and obviously Champions League and whatnot. So, Bellingham, for me, will be a candidate for player of the season, because he's done a good job overall. The fact he's, you know, kind of saving Real Madrid at this current moment, a 20-year-old saving the biggest club in world football right now, I think that's a tough to ask. And the fact that he's got such an elite mentality, he's playing relatively well, scoring the goals, and for me, he's only going to ascend and get better. So for me, I think he's definitely a candidate. Whether he's, if he's a signing of the summer, I'm not too sure about that. I think you can make a case for. I think
there's
other players you can make a case for.
Sorry,
the summer, just
I'm never allowed to say his name. The guy in Liverpool, Slobodja, or I can't
maybe I haven't really watched
Slobodzai. Slobodzai,
yes,
but you can
Slobby.
Maybe say that maybe on stats, who knows? But Bellingham's definitely up there. I don't know if to say convincingly or concretely that he's the signing of the summer right now, but he's definitely top three top for what he's done. But I don't really assess Bellingham on the goals, really, because if he was for me. Like getting assists and kind of dictating the midfield for Madrid and also getting goals, you know, here and there, then I'll say, yeah, 100% he's another summer. But because I look at his game as a box midfielder, I'm not really looking at the goals because that's not his job. It's like a defender, like a fullback. If you've got six goals within eight games, fair enough, that's great. But for me, I don't assess you on that. You're a defender, so you're supposed to defend first. You also have the stats, obviously, of the defender, the clean sheets, the tackles, interceptions, all those things, isn't it? So that's why, for me, I don't really kind of allude to this the perspective that Jude Bellingham is the signing of the summer.
Sam, do you want to go next or shall I?
Yeah, you can go, bro. I'll go after you. It's cool.
So this is what I said about Jude. First, like, again, I might be in a minority because I'll be honest with you, I'm not sitting here Bundesliga hype watching every Saturday when they used to play on Sky and stuff like that. But I, looking at what he's doing at Madrid right now and the goals and stuff, even if he's playing as forward as he is, to get them goals, you have to have what I call that nose for a goal, because his goals don't have to be beautiful. But if he's in that spot at the right time, coming in from midfield, in that box, being able to score game winners, for me, like, I look at Bellingham, I think, because he probably did play a deeper role at Borussia Dortmund, and I do think he's probably been misprofiled a little bit as a player. I don't think he's as much as a box-to-box midfielder as he is probably more of a goal scoring midfielder that he can probably potentially turn into. We see a lot with players, some starting as fullbacks end up being DMs or wingers or whatever like that. There's a lot of transition, as you lot mentioned before, like Bellingham's quite young. I do think his career, not necessarily his career, his professional career probably has been misprofiled because he provides a lot of technical ability probably on the ball that they may lack if somebody else takes that spot. So he's been just taking that box-to-box, quote-unquote, role. But I do think, looking at the way he's played at Madrid, coming up with the game winner, scoring the goals, he's probably been more misprofiled than anything else. And he probably is more of a forward, attacking-minded midfielder than he's probably given credit for.
To be holding that, obviously, you said you didn't really watch Bundesliga as much. I don't really watch Bundesliga as much as well. But obviously, I watched the highlights or whatnot. But obviously, as you're an England fan, I'm assuming, you watch him at England and he's a bit more deeper. Like, obviously, a bit more forward than compared to the likes of Henderson and obviously Calvin Phillips and whatnot, or Declan Rice, but he's still playing in a more of a deeper position. Like, he's.
Yeah, that's fine.
His territory is a bit more deeper than what you're seeing at
Madrid. Yeah, I'm saying that he's playing deeper, but if you give him the opportunity, as he is with Madrid, playing in that forward midfield role, you can excel in that where his goal contributions exist a lot more. That's what I'm saying about when it comes to Jude Bellingham right now. Like, you could put him forward, and be like, you can get the goals. And because of his ability to sniff out the goals, I think he can do that. I'm not going to say he's going to be the most creative player in the world, whatever like that. My point is, but when I say missed profile, I mean like people just think, oh, this kid's the guy with the ball. He can run up and down workhorse, or he's jinky. He plays through balls from 40 yards out and stuff like that. I don't think Jude personally is like that, but I think Jude probably hasn't got the opportunity to be the goal scorer that he is, where he has done it at Real Madrid. What I'll say is also, succeeding at Madrid, as much as it pains me, my boy didn't do that, Hazard. He just did it. Injuries, whatever you want to say, he did it. And for him to come, and not necessarily with the goals, but the way the goals have been, being game winners when they needed it, I think that holds a lot of value. He's up there for the signing of the summer, for sure, because when he came with a hefty price tag, and two, he took that risk to move from Dortmund, that he could have been cushy out for a bit longer and succeed. We've already seen another young player go up from Dortmund to Manchester United, and yeah, the less we talk about him, the better. He stinks right now, Jadon Sancho. So you have to give him credit. But the other player that I could put in the similar category in terms of signings is probably James Maddison for Tottenham right now. And outside of that, yeah, you probably look at Jude for what he's able to contribute in terms of winning the points from Madrid. Yeah, he's up there. Him and Maddison probably are the top two European market signings.
No, I kind of agree with you, but I think for me, it's just a thing where I'm going to choose Bellingham by default because I don't know who else I can put there. I mean, I think you can. I said Madison is another one. I can't believe I forgot about him earlier. But when you talk about value for money, only 40 million, and then the job he's been able to do. I mean, because you could argue Bellingham is playing with better players, bigger stage, bigger club.
Could potentially say Wood Prowse. I think what he's done so far at West Ham, even though West Ham are not really being stonewall in the league.
But then, aren't we just reaching then? Because But aren't we just reaching? If there hasn't really been any great signings, then it's kind of, like Richard said, by default, giving it to Bellingham. But I think in terms of the question that Richard asked about signing the season, one, I think it's too early. He's only played like, what, 6-7 games. And I think you have to bear in mind what's kind of expected of him now. And he's able to do this, with, like we've said, no striker, no Vinicius, Rodrigo being in and out. But when Real Madrid get their full team back, now his remit, as his position is going to change. Now he's going to have to be in midfield and try and dominate. And let's see how he comes out on top when he has to be a central midfielder, where you have to dominate a Pedri or Gavi or Gundogan, or in the Champions League where you're playing against, you know, a Rodri. And that's when we're going to say, okay, cool. Is he really that guy? Is he him? I can't really go based on, well, at the moment, you know, Real playing hero ball and he's just stepping up and getting tapping. So in terms of that whole question, is he the best signing of the season? One, it's too early, but two, as we've all said, there hasn't really been any great signings that's been made, so it's a bit of by default. And two, I can't judge him based on him not actually playing his position, because we might see him go back and drop into midfield, and then when he's playing against those big guys, whether it's, you know, an Atletico Madrid, a Barcelona in the Champions League, and he's going to get, and then he gets outperformed, what are we going to say then? So let's just see how the season continues, and then we can kind of make that judgment there. Do you know what I mean?
Do you know what I was going to say? This, like, I'm on this missed profile bandwagon type of thing. Right? When all these guys come back, if he still plays in the position that he's playing currently, does my argument kind of stand? If Ancelotti continues to play with him and he excels, was this guy kind of missed profile for his career until now?
I don't think that's right, Kojo. I don't think that's the case, though, because, again, he's just in that position by default because they don't have a striker. Because when they do end up getting a striker, they're not going to be playing with a diamond. They're going to play Camavinga, Tchouameni, and him in midfield. So he's going to drop deeper, and they're going to have a focal point, which is meant to be Mbappe at some point. They're going to have Vinicius and Rodrigo. So, yeah, if he does do that for the season, maybe. But moving forward, that's not going to be his position playing as a number 10 or a second striker or a false nine. So it's a bit misconstrued in terms of your question and answer.
Just to wrap up, yeah, that's, if that's the case, if it wasn't the case, then yes, I'll fully admit.
Well, all I'm saying is I saw Antonio come into the Premier League as a fullback and now he's sitting as a striker for West Ham doing podcasts. Anything can happen.
Yeah, But that's not Miss Prof.
If we're using our reasonable minds, what we've seen of Bellingham's career, and just knowing like Real Madrid, if they get him like a proper number nine in, he wouldn't need to kind of take those risks out of his game and kind of be more forward and have to play hero ball and have to actually kind of be in the box as often as he is like currently, do you know what I'm saying? So kind of to echo what Sam said, once they get like an Mbappe, or maybe if they should have got Harry Kane this summer or whatever, they wouldn't be playing a diamond. And he would just be playing his box role with Tchouaméni, Camavinga, maybe Modric, or Chris, do you know what I'm saying? Just kind of playing that traditional role at Dortmund and England. Because if you look at the way, right, when he was playing with Haaland, you weren't really seeing many goals from Bellingham. Let's be real. When he's playing with England with Harry Kane, you're not really seeing him getting too forward like that. Maybe he's getting involved in assists or getting involved with England creating good plays and, you know, goal scoring opportunities, but he's not directly responsible for goals that England are scoring, or even most of the case for Dortmund of last season and two seasons ago, especially when Haaland was there. So if that was against the best, then fair enough. I'll admit that, you know, maybe I was a bit wrong. But I don't see it being the case because naturally Romja will get a strike in probably by January or next summer.
No, I would be quite interested to see how the season unfolds. As I said, we've only played like 2 months of the season now. So we'll see how Bellingham's career continues to improve. As I said, I do think he's had a good start, but you know, at the same time, I do feel like some of his performances have been covered by the goals at the same time anyways. But goals win you games and he's scoring goals. Like, if someone could do that for Chelsea, then I'd be happy regardless of how they can perform. Obviously, just switching sports, going over to Formula One. Yesterday, Red Bull won the sixth Constructor Championship. Look at this guy going ghost. Like, I'm not going to ask him the questions anyways. I'm joking. Red Bull won the sixth Constructors title yesterday. You know what's one thing I was really happy about after Red Bull won the thing? Mm. I've seen everyone celebrate, and I did not see any pictures of Perez celebrating, which was good because he does not deserve that Constructor Championship, because yesterday he had another stinker. His qualifying was poor, where he was beaten by his teammate by 8/10. In the race, he took out K-Mag. I think he tried to take out someone else as well, breaking front wings.
Did he hit Lewis as well?
Yeah, he hit Lewis in the open. Like, at this point, he's just...
I need to
like,
see the one thing, you know. Japanese time was mad, but carry on.
Yeah, and obviously, I don't want to go too much on him, because I do think he's a good driver, but I think he's a good driver for a midfield team. I think, like, this season, more than anything, has confirmed that he's not ready for... Because he's only leading Lewis by 33 points in the Red Bull, and that's just crazy to me. So, the question I'm going to ask, given that, and obviously it might be too early to tell, but you can see Yuki Tsunoda and Ricciardo have signed a new deal for AlphaTauri back to 24, and they're saying Lawson will be guaranteed a seat in 25. Out of Perez, Tsunoda, and Ricciardo, who do you feel like should be the one to make way for him?
Oh, for Lawson?
Yeah, because obviously Red Bull and AlphaTauri are all the same. As I'm asking, obviously Perez will be under pressure at the end of 24, Ricciardo 24, Yuki Tsunoda 24 as well. So all the contracts end at the same time. And if Lawson is guaranteed a seat,
all of them, like right now, Perez is stinking up in the Red Bull. Ricciardo gets an opportunity to race and breaks his arm or whatever he does, so he can't do that. And Yuki's so temperamental that he has a good race, he has a bad race, he has a good race type of thing. I think Yuki's probably matured a lot more to where he's good enough now to probably maintain a spot. So you probably look at Ricciardo and Perez. I think the only problem I'd say is Perez is still... I think Christian Horner knows what he's got in Perez, so he knows he's still got someone who's safe enough that if they ever need him in a battle against another team, Perez is the type of guy that can make the other guys race a lot more difficult for someone like Max, for example. So I think getting rid of Perez would probably be a bit more of a risk, because he's like a yes man to a point without you disrespecting him too much. You probably look at Ricciardo. Like, if Ricciardo's going to be there, if he's good, he's fair enough, but if he's not, they won't really care too much type of thing.
I think they're going in a whole completely different direction. I think they're going to start looking into their Red Bull driver program and see if there's anyone that they think that they can kind of give a shot, because you've had Perez, you know what it's like having him as your number two driver. You've had Ricciardo as your number two, so you already know what that's about. And the Chinese guy, the Japanese guy, I forgot his name again.
Tsunoda.
Like Tsunoda, like Abbas said, very inconsistent. The mindset, I don't think he's ready to be in a championship-winning car and being that second driver to kind of compete for podiums on a regular basis. So they'll probably just go with something left field and you'll be like, oh shit, why they do that? You're better off saying, you know what, let me get a young driver in our program that can kind of eventually, because you hear Max saying he doesn't know if he's going to be racing for long. Someone that's going to be happy to be in the wings of Max, but knowing that maybe in the next 3 to 4 years, this is going to be my team and I can take it over and be the next Max Verstappen. And we've seen it with Red Bull. That's what they generally do. They've thrown so many different people. They've had Albon. Like, imagine, like, just deep how many different people they've had in that car, and they've given it opportunities and they've got rid of them like midway through the season or just one season and done. So I think they'll just probably do something left field and say, look, let's not go with the tried and tested that we've done already. Let's bring in a young, hungry driver that, yes, is going to be happy to be the number two, but it's also going to want to fight and, you know, try and get some wins as well.
This is what I'll say, though, that if you look at the tried and tested formula right now, it's working. Like, they're getting the constructor title. They what? Back to back.
Yeah, but that's now. Basically Max, though. Max, though, not Perez, though.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
But yeah, let's just. I'm not saying that they wouldn't win a constructor. I think they'd win a constructor without Perez anyway. Like, Max could probably do it by himself. Like, realistically,
if you substituted Max for, Lawson or whatever, any rookie, No, but I'm just saying, for example, don't you think they could get the same amount of points that Perez has got? I wouldn't be surprised. So my point is, why go for the trial and tested when you can get a young upstart that is going to be hungry? Yes, know his position in the team, but also going to want to deliver. Where you see Perez, he's happy to go out and qualify and say, yeah, cool, I'm using my magic and work my way up the field. Like, Christian Horner doesn't want that. Like, Red Bull don't want that.
Because even as you're saying it now, even just checking the standings, Mercedes have 305 points. They're second in constructors. Verstappen has 400 points by himself. That's 95 points that he's gapping the rest of the competition all by himself. So, as I said, like, I don't go too much on Perez because I feel like I'm saying a lot. And as I said, it's not a thing where it's in... I don't think he's a good driver. I do think he's a very good driver because of, as you say, what he did, especially towards the end of Racing Point. But it's one thing doing it for a midfield car, and it's another thing being in a title-winning car, and you're performing as poorly as he's doing. Because obviously, he's still second in the championship, and you see you're second, you still feel like that should be classed as a good season. But when your teammate is dominating the way he's dominating, and Mercedes have had loads of struggles this season, and you're only 33 points ahead of Hamilton, who is the greatest F1 driver of all time, I do think is problems. Obviously, just quick switching over to Mercedes, because it looks like there's trouble in, I don't know if it's called a trouble in paradise, but
ruin.
Second, but I feel like
not
there's
the
a
trouble
weird
is brewing.
Yeah, I feel like there's a weird dynamic between Hamilton and Russell, whereas in they both have mentality of being a number one driver. I think the team is both treating them as equal, but I think it's coming to a point where it's clear who's the faster and better driver, but Mercedes don't want to give in yet. Obviously, you don't know if it would have gotten him, but Hamilton did have the chance to chase down Charles Leclerc, and they were wasting time trying to do Sainz strategy. And even Sainz said on the radio that these guys are trying to copy my strategy, ha ha ha. And even eventually end up passing Russell, so it was a waste of time. Do you feel like Mercedes need to establish that they're someone here number one and then go from there, or do you feel like they should keep treating them as equal?
You know what it is? It's politics at the moment, because Mercedes are not fighting for anything. So why do you need to have a number one? That's how they're looking at it. Like, yes, Lewis, like, really and truly should go with Lewis, established, you know, had so, look, the most podiums, most wins, 7-time world champion. You should go with him, but they're looking at like, okay, cool, we're not in a championship position. So what's the point of saying this is the number one driver, that's the number two driver? If there's an opportunity where we can switch and do certain stuff, maybe, but let's just leave it as that. If, for example, you know, Mercedes were battling Verstappen and Red Bull for a championship, of course they're going to go over Lewis, because Lewis has got experience. We've seen it in the last two races that he's had better strategy and he could have done better than Russell. But just because Russell wants to, like, Russell seen his peers, Leclerc, Max Verstappen, Sainz, Norris, Lando, they're all battling for podium, exactly, battling for podium wins. He wants to kind of do that, the same thing as well. As Richard would know, trying to do Shakara, but that's not what he needs to be doing. He needs to understand that there's an older sibling in front of you that can do better and say, do you know what, right about now, he's got a better race pace, better strategy, better chance of winning the race or competing and you know, abiding by that. But he just wants to kind of fight and be, you know, the younger sibling that, you know, he's a pastor's son and he's never going to get told off kind of thing. But you know, Toto and Mercedes are letting it happen. So it's just going to not end up well.
It's interesting you said that, Sam, about looking at these peers, because I think even this weekend, Lando Norris does equal Russell in career podiums. And also, they're now tied on points, considering the start that McLaren had at the beginning, which is, if you look at the season as a whole, remember when McLaren was, when they were getting 17th and 19th, and McLaren was nowhere to be seen until, I think, was it Spain or Austria? And now he's now level on points, so he's gotten 4 podiums, but you've only gotten 1. And now it's like, Lando Norris is now getting all the praise that you got last season and saying he's the better driver. So I feel like, even though the car isn't a title-winning car, I feel like he's feeling the pressure it takes to be at the top a bit, especially these cars couple of races. But I'll let Basco.
Do you know what it is? I think Sam said something that's important, because they're not racing for anything. It doesn't really matter as much. And then, two, when you've got someone, like, if you look at the age discrepancy, like, if I said to you, a guy who's, just let's put a normal situation, a guy who's 40 versus a guy who's 23, 24, if you've got the same guy, who's meant to be faster? The guy who's younger, who feels, should feel more athletic, being able to put the foot to the metal, pedal to the metal, and go ahead and do what he needs to do. And if you see sometimes, if Lewis is finishing higher than you, or Lewis is more consistent than you, people will just talk that, is George Russell really that guy? Is George Russell able to take over a team? Can he be the number one guy? Because look, Lewis is still higher than you in the championship. Lewis is still probably having more points finishes, top 5 finishes, whatever metric you want to measure it. If he's beating him, even though George plays this persona as this nice guy, whatever, like, it will eat up at you. And then obviously you want to show up and show out. And yeah, I think that's probably what it is, because right now Mercedes are at a point where they're not going to win anything. It's just a case of, okay, Russell, we can't say to you pull back, because there's no reason for you to pull back. We're not competing. The only time they'd actually ask them to pull back, both of them, is if second is up in the constructors, there's a couple of races left and they have the opportunity to win that. If they do, they may well turn around and say to them, boys, we're going to work as a team here. If we need you to let someone go past for the betterment of second place, you're going to have to do it. Other than that, right now, they can't really turn around and say to Russell, you need to do something for us, help us out, because Russell wants to put his imprint on this team to be like, I don't want you lot to make Lewis Hamilton the number one guy, even though he signed an extension. I want to be that guy. I want to be the guy going forward for Mercedes 2.0 if we are going to win a championship down the line type of thing, and not still relying on Lewis.
Yeah, as I said, it will be quite interesting to see, because the George Russell stocks are falling at the moment. And I think the one that even got me was yesterday when I saw someone try and compare him to Lance Stroll. And I said, you know, we're just going to have to pump the brakes over here, because he's not that bad. And I still feel
Listen, all I'm saying is, he did crash out when he had the position to win a podium. Yeah. That's a Lance Stroll type of thing to do.
Nah, but Lance Stroll is smelly. Like, that's just daddy money while he's racing. If his dad didn't own the team, he would have been out of F1 like 2-3 years ago. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. So, as I said, it would just be quite interesting to see. Just the last thing on Mercedes, because one is, I can see, although you guys have said that obviously there's no reason to choose him because Mercedes are not fine for anything, Lewis Hamilton seems to be kind of very frustrated figure in his interviews and things like that. Whether it's George Russell, whether it's the strategy, whether it's the car, who knows? I even saw something about that he's going to the it's going to the headquarters of the base.
Yeah, he's going to Brackley. Yeah,
to go and see if they're listening to him, because I think he's tired. But again, as I was talking about earlier, we were talking about the strategy and stuff. I saw a question, is Mercedes the new Ferrari? Because a lot of the strategy that they seem to be coming up with, don't seem, not that they're as bad as what Ferrari were doing last season, but they don't seem to be elite. And the pit stops, when it comes to pit stops, Mercedes are a disgrace compared to the rest of the field. So do you feel like their strategy, that's what I was, do you feel like their stance is starting to slip a bit because they're not winning races and competing anymore? Or I'll ask again, is this just a blip?
That's what I was about to say. Like, it goes back to what are you competing for? So in these type of situations, strategy is like, let's try something new and see how it works and how it goes. Because again, like, if you, Mercedes at their worst, they're going to probably finish between third and fifth. Yeah. So they're not losing anything anyway. Yes, they're still going to get their, you know, their points for the constructors title. Obviously, they want to finish second. But I just think at the moment, in terms of strategy, they're just trying different stuff. Now, they're putting the emphasis on the drivers to come up with their own strategy and say, what do you guys want to do? At the end of the day, it's your race. What decisions do you want to make? And I think it's at that situation. You know, like, for example, like last year, City won the league. You start chopping and change your teams and you're just trying to figure out, okay, cool, give these guys minutes. Right about now, Mercedes is saying, look, we can't win. Red Bull's already got the constructors. We'll just pick in your hands. We'll ask you questions. Do what you want to do and see how they go. If it doesn't go well, we gave Lewis the option to do X, Y, Z. He went with this. We gave George the option to do X, Y, Z. He went with this. We left it in their hands. They can't really get mad at us. So I just think it's just a trial and error situation now, knowing where they are in the standings. Yeah. And it's not going to, it can't really go any better or any worse for them.
I was going to say, realistically, for the Mercedes team, they can't win what they tried to aim to win, which is obviously the constructors' title. So it's like Sam said, he is free reign a little bit. And also with themselves as well, they probably want to experiment internally within the team. So they probably say to Lewis or George, we're going to run this particular strategy for him. We're going to run it for him on this one. And whichever's more effective, okay, we know what that works type of thing. And sometimes, yeah, the strategy for person A might work for person B won't, and then that guy will be pissed and vice versa. But at this moment, like you said, Mercedes, they got semi-free reign to be able to just experiment a bit. And then if like I said, if a battle for second is available, or which it looks like it is, I don't know the constructor standing from the top of my head, but if it's there or it gets a bit tighter compared to like an Aston Martin or Ferrari or McLaren, then at that point, they'll probably go back to more semi-championship mode. It's like, boys, this is strategy one, this is strategy two. You're going to back this guy up to be able to do this because we need these positions. But right now, there is a bit of experimenting to be able... They're free to do the experimenting, basically.
We'll be interested to see how the rest of the races go. Will Lewis Hamilton...
I'm going to give you that prediction right now.
There you hear it. Another Abbas prediction. With the contract in the season.
What?
What was the prediction? I didn't hear it.
He goes, how do all the races go? Max wins them all if he wants to.
I see. All right. Say no more. Forbid.
But yeah, it looks like that's all we have time for today. I say thank you for tuning in to another episode. The NBA is returning next month. So I'm excited for that. And we'll be bringing that back to the pod as well. And we'll be getting guests on as well. So we're going to be dropping videos during the week alongside the pod as well. But as I said, as you can see from the bottom, everyone's social media is going to be in the description down below. Kojo, welcome for joining us back. the party has ended. So as I said, follow us on all social media platforms at outbounds_UK. And until next week, thank you for listening. So...